Hello, this is Chaz from Quiet Speculation, and you're listening to the QS Cast. If you're a QS subscriber, you're hearing this as soon as it gets published. If you're not a subscriber, you had to wait a few days. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, or you just want to know more about Quiet Speculation, go to quietspeculation.com/tour and check out everything we have to offer. All right. Hey, folks. Good evening. Welcome to a quick cast here. I just wanted to get a quick cast recorded here because we have the Pro Tour coming up. Things are going to get a little hectic because it's a pretty brutal time slot for, me on the East Coast. So I had some extra time, wanted to get a quick podcast in, just kind of in a preparation for the Pro Tour. We had Ogre on last week, but we didn't really kind of delve deeply into the Pro Tour. This is going to be Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan, and it is a modern Pro Tour, for those of you that don't know. So, you know, there's going to be kind of a lot to talk about, but I'm going to condense it as quickly and as best as I can. So Gervais is joining us again for Pro Tour coverage. I'm going to, you know, make sure everyone knows. I'm going to post the information in the QS coverage text channel about Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan, kind of the timing, like when to be on, when to expect coverage, what to expect from us in terms of Gervais and I. We worked together in a previous Pro Tour. We worked very well together. It's going to be awesome to work with him again. So, you know, it's just going to be a crazy time for the East Coast. I think day one starts at around 9 a.m., maybe a little after for day one. This is going to be on Friday, which is 3 a.m. for me. So I understand it's going to be pretty hectic for a lot of us, a good portion of this Discord. I know it's not as demanding on West Coast, but, you know, it's still starting at midnight. So it's going to be tough. And, in terms of Modern Pro Tour, I actually have these tabs open right now. I actually was reading a lot of the, and this is not really just a shameless plug, but our sister site, Modern Nexus, which is kind of under the QS umbrella here. You should kind of keep tabs. A lot of our writers are over there. Some of our, writers over there on Modern Nexus, rather, put out some really great stuff. I'm not just saying that, but made some really great points. I kind of honed in on this one for this week by Jordan Boisvert. I'm probably butchering his name, but Jordan wrote a really great piece over there about Pro Tour Bilbao, kind of what I'm doing here for the podcast. It's kind of just a precursor into that. And yeah, Efren, I mean, it starts at 3 a.m. and that's just the sealed section, three rounds. So standard doesn't, modern doesn't really start until like 6 a.m., something like that. So it's going to be brutal. But getting back to the article, I think it really laid out everything I kind of wanted to say. And, trying to educate myself a little bit more before the Pro Tour, I think Jordan went into a really great breakdown here about what to expect, what archetypes we may not see, some of the pro teams kind of honing in on some of these different archetypes. I don't, as diverse as modern can be, I don't think we'll see as much diversity. I think some of the bigger teams will likely hone in on some of the kind of main four archetypes that Jordan listed out here, which is Storm, Grixis Shadow, Lantern, and various forms of Tron. And those are really good choices in this metagame. Tron especially, I do think we'll end up seeing Eldrazi Tron probably more so than regular, more traditional versions of Tron. So with that being said, I kind of pulled up as much as I can in terms of, well, what does that really mean in terms of financial upside? And I think an overall, and this might not sound too enthusiastic, but I think an overall umbrella here for modern is to kind of tread lightly in a world, in a format kind of riddled with reprints and a lot of high frequency reprints, a lot. I mean, we get a master set. We just had a master set. We had a lot of reprints. But there, I think there are still a couple overall good cards to kind of look at and stash away in preparation for this tournament. But a lot of the other stuff could still have some upside. I'll bet they did have a reprint. Yeah, diverse, like BioSpark just said, a diversity is good. Have hard staples. Don't go in too deep. And I think that's going to be kind of the that's going to set the tone for this weekend. But mainly as I was going in and looking at these Eldrazi Tron lists, the Grixis Shadow lists, I tried to put together a couple cards that, you know, haven't been reprinted, which is, I guess, kind of high on my priority list, and kind of serve a purpose over a couple of different archetypes. And the ones, you know, I talked about Collective Brutality over the course of the last couple podcasts, so I don't want to beat that drum, you know, just beat it, but obviously that's one that I like. But another one that's kind of risen to the top of my list is also Kolgan's Command. And that is a card that is played amongst various archetypes like Grixis Shadow, like some of these sideboards that other archetypes use. Now, it's not always a bona fide main staple in some of these lists, but Grixis Delver, or Grixis Death Shadow, rather, has adopted into the main deck, and some other decks have incorporated it into the sideboards. So that's one to look at, too. In terms of, you know, even just looking at the Eldrazi Tron lists and the Storm lists, there's not a whole lot. But, you know, you look at Ad Nauseam Tron, you look at, Storm, rather, you look at the Gift Storm, and you see not a lot of not a lot there either. But I like Ad Nauseam. Hasn't been reprinted, but it's kind of pricey already. And we would have to, that would be entirely contingent on this version being played over other versions of more traditional Gift Storm. So I don't know if that's going to end up happening. So if we just are sticking to the kind of four lists that Jordan kind of laid out here, we're really kind of down to Grixis Shadow with Kolgan's Command. We have Lantern and the Tron lists. So, I mean, I try to do a lot of digging. Kolgan's Command, Collective Brutality come to mind. And another one that is very specialized to the Eldrazi Tron list, but still fairly inexpensive, is Thought Not Seer. And all the other, to a lesser extent, the Oath of the Gatewatch Eldrazi. But I really just don't like Matter Reshaper and Endbringer more than I do Reality Smasher or Thought Not Seer. And again, they're very specialized, so I don't really expect a ton of upside there either. Yeah, Thought Not Seer is easily the best of the new Eldrazi. No argument there, Bio. But, you know, and I think that has the highest ceiling out of all of them. But, you know, again, I'm just looking through a lot of these lists, folks, and I'm seeing very highly specialized cards, and not a whole lot of these cards that you can look at, like a Collective Brutality, like a Kolgan's Command, that can be played over various archetypes. So what else does that leave us with? Well, it kind of leaves us with mana bases. So you kind of look at maybe there could be some upside on some of these Shocklands, but then you kind of look at cards like Watery Grave that are already $15. You look at Steam Vents that are already $15. You know, there's just not a whole lot. So that brought me to looking at, you know, some of the modern, the top 16 of the Star City Games, which Jordan also brought up, and kind of threw out, you know, that humans will underperform. Some of these collected company lists may underperform in this kind of in this meta of Storm, Shadow, Lantern, and Eldrazi Tron. And I can't agree more. I mean, I just don't think those archetypes are cut out to having a great matchup if that is what is going to be a very focused meta at a Pro Tour. But, you know, I tried to do as much as I can in terms of trying to just recommend as much as I can. But, you know, going into humans, you go into these counter companies lists, there's just not a lot other than the newer cards like Kitesail Freebooter. A lot of those foils already popped there. There's not really much more upside there. Cards like Meddling Mage already increased a good amount. We see cards like Thalia, both the Dark Ascension and now the WMCQ. I believe those were the It was for the WMCQ. Those promos already increased drastically. Mantis Rider foils increased drastically. So that leaves us to cards like Aether Vial, which took a pretty big hit from Iconic Masters, but they bounced back in a pretty big way. So there wasn't a huge drop off there. You know, they kind of started at 20, 25, and now have kind of trended up to the 30s. So I don't really, that's not really a huge recommendation there. That's just from humans. Then we move over to company lists. Well, collected company sitting at 14, 15 bucks does probably have a little bit of upside there, but not a whole lot. I think if you were to get out of them quickly, if you're picking them up for, you know, anywhere from 12 to 15, I think you can easily turn around it with a good showing, turn around and offload those for 20, 25, probably closer to 25 easily. Malcontents. Oh, yeah, right, right. So those even also as well. It's kind of the newer tech stuff. Again, looking at, you know, ad nauseum, other storm lists, you know, the marquee cards are already, you know, sitting in the $15 range, which again, ad nauseum, when we just talk about ad nauseum, the card has a lot of elasticity. It has definitely rebounded back from, you know, 10 to 15, then pretty solid at 15. If it does well, it skyrockets into the mid-20s, then kind of settles back into the $15 range again. Yeah, Unlife, all those, all that stuff. And this is now like the second tier of cards that I talked about that are just more specialized. All these cards have a high, very high elasticity. So, you know, you look at Collected Company, you look at Ad Nauseam, you look at Phyrexian Unlife, all these kind of second tier cards that increase based on a good performance. And that's really what we're going to be looking for here, other than the bona fide staples that I talked about that have not been reprinted because, you know, they're newer cards or what have you. We're looking for results here. And I think that's going to be the underlying tone and what really Gervais and I are going to try and relay as best as possible. Anything that's doing well that hasn't been on the radar already or any new tech is what is going to be increasing at this Pro Tour. I just don't see a lot of cards spiking outside of that. You know, if collected cards like Collected Brutality and Cole Against Commander all over the top eight, maybe there's a bump there, but they, you know, have been performing well already. It's just the springboard of, well, they're really doing well in this format and they were in the Pro Tour. Yeah, Breach and Goryeos. I mean, Breach had a invocation printing, but that didn't really do anything. And Breach, I mean, at this point, is a pretty drastic buy-in as well as Goryeos. So I just can't recommend those cards. Another one that I wanted to look at was these Titan Shift lists. Hope maybe these do well and we see that a bump in Primeval Titan, but they were reprinted in Iconic Masters. So Scape Shift again, but it's already like in the $40-$50 range. So I really tried, folks. I mean, I really tried to delve, no pun intended, really tried to delve deep into the kind of obvious stuff and then the less obvious stuff. And I would urge you to read Jordan's article, because I do think that's a really good take on, you know, going into this Friday, going into the modern rounds of Friday and Saturday. And I just think, you know, kind of we track what's going on in the Pro Tour and then go from there. I mean, I think the more hype period of modern outside of, you know, something really drastic happening in the modern Pro Tour, like I just said, new technology or an archetype that, you know, is doing well that was kind of on the cusp. The next kind of hype period after that will be unbans. And I do think unbans at this point is more than likely. I just don't know if it's Blood Braid Elf or any of the other cards that we were talking about. But I do think unbans are more than likely at this point. Yeah, that is a very good that's a very good point there. One of our insiders, Chris, watch out for anniversary 25 spoilers during the Pro Tour. That could certainly happen. They have used Pro Tours as a vehicle for big announcements and hype. So that could definitely be a possibility that they kind of showcase a couple anniversary 25 spoilers, you know, during the Pro Tour, during a, you know, a break or something like that. So it definitely can happen. Any other questions here? Because you know, we're already, you know, I kind of started at little after 8:30, and we're already like at 8:52. So I would just love some questions here, because like I said, I think my kind of final take here going into Friday and Saturday is there's a lot of known quantities out there. Modern is in a great spot for in terms of players and in terms of a metagame, but not nearly as lucrative for, you know, in terms of financial upside. So I have my kind of two high priority cards to look at is Call Against Command and Collective Brutality, and to a lesser extent, Thought Not Seer. But other than that, it's just basically what is going to perform well, and if there's any new technology. If there's a card or a rare from a set that is performing well at the Pro Tour that, you know, certainly hasn't had a reprint, but even if it did have a reprint, hasn't been played, I do think that'll generate, you know, the hype of this weekend. But Jordan's article, very great. Modern Nexus always has really great stuff. Again, not just a shameless plug that they're under the QS umbrella, but all this week they've been putting out really great articles going into the PT. And they also break down the current metagame, so you can kind of see where things may be headed. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of variation amongst the big names or the big name teams in the Pro Tour. I do think they'll likely settle on the decks like Grixis Shadow, on the decks like Eldrazi Tron. Do you think an unban will be informed based on the addition of the play design group? I do think that it will be informed based on the play design group. That's kind of why they were brought on in the first place. And I do think they didn't want to shake anything up going into the Pro Tour. That kind of was their thing going into this Pro Tour. They said adamantly a few times that they didn't want to shake anything up, but I do think they wanted to unban something or ban something afterwards. I kind of think they wanted to make a change, but they didn't want to make a change beforehand. And I do think it'll be pushed by the play design group. Do they unban something odd knowing that Dominaria will have an answer? That's a great question. I don't think they will unban something based on Dominaria. I think they will unban something just for the overall health of Modern. If they unban something, I think it's predicated on the fact that Modern already has answers and not just because they're printing something in Dominaria. If Eldrazi Tron or Storm wins, do you expect a quick ban of Chalice or Grape Shot? If Eldrazi Tron or Storm wins, I think something will be gone. I don't know if Chalice or Grape Shot will be the targets, but Chalice seems like a good one. Yeah, I try to do as much kind of background as I could. Even over the last few weeks, I kind of just been keeping tabs, not only on SEG finishes, but I've also been looking at Modern leagues. But the same kind of trends just keep coming up. I mean, really, Jordan said it best in his Nexus article. I keep going back to that, but he really just said it best of Tron, Grixis Shadow. I do think to a lesser extent this Mardu Pyromancer deck though is pretty good, but you know, this Discord server being as awesome as it is, already identified Bedlam Reveler. I know Tarkan talked about it on the podcast, and foils kind of took off, but maybe non-foils. I mean, foils are already in the $10 to $12 range, but we have non-foils sitting at, you know, a buck. I think for a Shadows over Innistrad card, that card could probably, you know, on a good showing, spike to increase to like the $3 and $4 range, maybe $5 over the course of the weekend. So I would get out of those fast, get in and out of those as fast as you possibly could. But I think it would probably go from $1 to $5 and then settle at $3. Yeah. Guillaume also has started posting some metagame snapshots on the QS website. And I would talk, I would definitely tune into those whenever he puts those out, because a lot of background analytics goes into those. I can attest to that for sure, that Guillaume definitely puts the time in to those. Old foil lands are drying up. Yeah, I noticed that as well, Chris. A lot of the, and this is across multiple editions of the Tron lands, any of the editions that can be foil, the Tron lands, specific artifact lands. Yeah, definitely. Any offbeat lands, we saw Ancient Ziggurat, we saw Unclaimed Territory. I thought that was a good one. Oh, specific arts. Sorry. Yeah, that's true too. That's definitely true too. Okay, trying to keep this as quick as I can. Probably have just a last couple minutes here. Any last burning questions before I kind of sign out of here. I just wanted to do something quick to kind of get some recommendations out there and just kind of look and get the tone of the Pro Tour. Fielding questions. Last call. All right, no problem. A few minutes. Okay. What wins, gut call? Are the odds that a spicy deck takes it down? My gut call is that probably Grixis Death Shadow takes it down. So that probably rules out the odds that a spicy deck takes it down. But in terms of spicy decks, I thought the new Mardu Pyromancer list was kind of a spicy one, but that archetype actually goes in a couple different ways too. I know that there was recently a, and this is, again, like I said, I went as deep as I could on this one. There was a Modern IQ in Lexington, and it was seventh place. It was a Mardu Pack Rat list, I guess trying to go off, you know, try to, you know, deviate a little bit from the Mardu Pyromancer list. But four Pack Rat seemed pretty crazy, along with four Goblin Rabble Masters. So those are the kind of like spicy lists that could do something. But I don't think the problem is that the Pro Tour, those decks aren't going to be in huge numbers. So the way the Pro Tour is really covered, if there aren't that many of those spicy deck lists, you're not going to see a ton of camera time. So if you do end up seeing camera time on some of these lists, they also have to do well after that. And if there's not a lot of these archetypes piloted, you know, if there's two, three, maybe four of these archetypes in a large pool, it's just really hard for something like that to go through and win the tournament. That is a Mox deck that pros pick up later. Yeah, these are kind of just off the beaten path archetypes that are good, but I don't think it's something that these pros and these big teams are bringing to the Pro Tour, as unfortunate as that is. Okay, folks, I think that's going to wrap it up. It's about, just wanted to let Guillaume finish here. Yeah, new streaming schedule. Rich Hagen detailed that. That is in the article that came out earlier or yesterday. Do you feel that the team aspect has changed the Pro Tour? Absolutely. Absolutely, I have. And I think for the optics, for the better, but in terms of the overall, are there these spicy lists? Are there these archetypes that come out of nowhere? I do think that hurts those chances unless a big team is on a deck like this is what we're doing for a modern Pro Tour, like we saw with the Eldrazi deck that came out of seemingly nowhere and took over the Pro Tour and subsequently was so strong that it had to get banned. So I think there's a lot of pros and cons for these this team aspect at a Pro Tour, but I think it absolutely has changed the dynamic of the Pro Tour, especially when you get these huge names like LSV and Paulo and all these different names coming together on one team. How do some of these other teams really combat that when you have like three different Channel Fireball teams and they're all completely stacked by great talent? It absolutely changes that dynamic. All right, I hope that answers your question as best I could, but definitely follow along. It's going to be awful timing, but we're going to do as best coverage as we're accustomed to doing. So as the coverage you're all accustomed to doing, like I said, it's going to be, back to normalcy here. I know we had some issues last Pro Tour with emails and some of the updates weren't posted to the forums. That's on me. But we're going to just be sending out emails, doing what we do, everything that everyone's accustomed to. Yep. Short and sweet cast. All right, folks, that is going to do it. I am going to go and edit this real quick and get it on the website momentarily. So, yeah, thanks, everyone. And I will see you again maybe once more during the week. Maybe Tarkan and I will cast normally. But until then, I will see you all for Pro Tour coverage. And you'll be seeing some literature from me on that subject. All right, folks. Good night. Thanks, everyone.